Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I'd like to welcome you to my home. It's been a confounding past couple weeks and a half, but I'm proud to say that I have fully entered the transitional phase from home to home. The past couple days, I have been moving into my new temporary dwelling, my son and I, and we are comfortable and crafting a sense of peace and this newness that is every new wave of life, I guess. Today I'd like to discuss art and the act of creation and what it means to me to create things and why I've found it so important to create things. As is very obvious on this show, this being a piece of creation that I'm quite proud of, and I guess, yeah, that's funny. You know, so I'm reading the second book in Dante's Divine Comedy, which is Dante's Inferno, Dante's Purgatory, and Dante's Paradiso, which is the three realms of the afterlife, and he has to go through hell and pass through hell to get to purgatory, and thus after that into paradise, and there's where he finds his love, yada yada yada. But at the beginning of each of the three parts, because there's three definitive sections of this poem, like the first layer of hell is pride, and then the first level of purgatory is also people who were afflicted with pride. And I assume, even though I haven't read the paradise, that at that place also there will be some form of pride that is discussed even in paradise. I mean, I guess that's kind of weird, you know, because there's always punishment happening in hell, and then there's purifying happening in purgatory. But if you're purified, are there layers in heaven? I guess I'll have to get there. But anyways, part of art is definitely going to be attached to pride. And if pride is a sin, which it can be, surely, you know, pride can destroy people and pride can make decisions be made foully. Yet you can have pride in something that, like, your children, like I feel like I've discussed before, and even in your art. Like when you show somebody something you've made, you know, I try not to watch their expressions too much because it'll affect me, I guess. But when you show somebody something that you made, it's a very special moment. You know, like, the things we create are external pieces of ourselves, almost. So what is art? Like, there's so many different types. Like, art is such an all-encompassing word, you know, starting with basics that you think of, like chalk art or painting, like any action of coloring, of marking on paper in 2D, but anything that is created upon paper is always going to be an illusion of shape, you know? Like sculpting, when you have a 3D object or a 3D art with texture, you know, that's a separate thing. But like, you can create the illusion of shape and form and even movement on a 2D piece of paper. And that's what's kind of fascinating about being a human being, is this ability to perceive things that aren't even there. Like, it's a switch that's flipped inside our brains where you see that image and you think that it's in motion. Like, that's insane to me. But sculpting in itself, like, think about that as well. Like, I think of, like, totem poles or, yeah, like, you have, like, a log and you remove all this material. Like, I was always kind of fascinated with whittling, too, and I was never very good at it, or sculpting or pottery. Like, when you layer things on over and over and over and over again, the way that, like, a 3D printer even works, you know, it's kind of, it's interesting to think how the artist who is sculpting can, they have to see the image in their head in some way, shape, or form in order to remove the material to make it happen, unless they're just winging it, which I assume some people do. I mean, I definitely wing most of my material. But then there's music, you know, and music are these like these harmonic patterns that are almost agreed upon, because not all music sounds good. Like culturally, like listening to different types of music, not every hit, and it doesn't always hit. Like, you know, I've heard some music that the patterns just don't work. And then of course it could be like alcohol, where it could be like an acquired taste, where you can listen to things over time and get more adjusted to them and learn to appreciate them more. Like, which begs to begs the question, like when you're experiencing art that you might not like, if you were to witness more of it, if you could learn to like art, and what the action of liking the art even means, right? Music has always fascinated me heavily. I was a musician throughout most of my career, throughout most of my life, you know. I started playing musical instruments in middle school, as most people do. I think it was probably about fifth grade. And I was horrible at it at first. I can sort of remember, like, there was almost like a tryout period where you had different experts almost with different instruments, and they were all kind of showing what they could do, and you kind of had this, and I was with like my dad, I'm pretty sure, and the first time I saw a saxophone, I knew that that was what I wanted to play, and I still have my saxophone even today. She needs some love, but the silly thing is that they wouldn't let you actually play the saxophone outright, so you had to start off on clarinet. And clarinet is a woodwind instrument. It has a reed, but it's very, very, very different than the woodwind instrument that is the saxophone. One, the reed size is incredibly different, but the saxophone is just a different beast altogether. Like structurally, the fingerings for a clarinet were insane, you know, and to me, at least, as soon as I picked up a saxophone, it made sense. So anyways, my point was, is I was playing clarinet for just months probably before there was this tryout period where you could try out for saxophone. And lo and behold, as soon as I touched a saxophone, I found my comfort space. Like, and as soon as I hit saxophone, I excelled. And throughout all of school, I maintained and kept playing instruments. Yet, everywhere I went, it was this comfort in it, you know, and probably right around the beginning of high school, maybe eighth grade, was when jazz band was introduced. And that was one of the first times that I ever had a chance to express myself completely fluidly with no reading of material, of trying to match something that something gave me, because in music classes, when they teach you how to learn an instrument, they teach you notes, they teach you sheet music. And that's not the only way to do it. Like Flea, the bass guitarist for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, never had any sort of structural training. He actually went and learned sheet music, I'm pretty sure, in his 40s. And he figured out music, and he figured out how to express himself through sheer talent and intuitiveness. But the way that I learned was structural, because I learned it in school. And so an ad lib in jazz is you have a kind of like a background, like you have sheet music for it. Like, and if you're stuck with rhythm, which is mainly like a lot of bass, a lot of guitar, like not all guitar, there's rhythm guitar, then there's also lead guitar. But you know, rhythm like drums, assuredly the drums got to keep a good pace all the time, but good jazz always has some sort of good drum solo, I would say, because you can always, like, even the guy who's holding everybody on his, or girl, the guy or girl that's holding everybody else on their back, you know, like, that person even deserves to be able to show their soul too, you know. But so you have, like, this background music, and then people have almost designated turns, and the people who are good at ad-libbing assuredly get a spot, and certain key times in the music to show their flow. But usually you have quite a few people who kind of take turns, and you know the sheet music really well, but you get to veer off track as far as you want to. And it's just, it's so much fun. It's like, it was some of the best times of my life. And I don't know if I could ever match it other than playing saxophone in front of people randomly, you know, and sporadically again. So yeah, music's really important, man, you know, and not to keep going on that, but the best jazz, I think, is when you have people ad-libbing and you'll have two people making shit up, but they'll be on the same wavelength and they'll start to borrow bits from each other and incorporating it into their solos. And it's like they're throwing a baseball back and forth. And it's one of the coolest things in the world. And you can never convince me otherwise. And then, of course, there's moving pictures, which is going to have, you know, stories and this element of music and this element of design again. You know, there are so many different types of movies now. And I've seen some stuff that's really cool. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen the show Legion, but Legion is wonderful. It's a piece of art. It's really pleasing to watch. You know, like, I've seen some stuff on TV that makes my brain go, wow, you know. And, you know, moving pictures and all kinds of TV and movies and documentaries and any way of storytelling that conveys that narrative is pretty fucking cool. I would consider furniture, architecture, like all these design elements again, definitely art. You know, my father likes to make furniture out of wood and metal products, and the stuff he makes is really, really fucking cool. And buildings, you know, even monuments are architecture, you know, not to be facetious, but like, you know, buildings are like sculptures on steroids that people can live in, you know. That's incredible. Like, if you can have a beautiful home that you built yourself, that's one of the, and I wouldn't say it has to be huge, you know, you don't have to have a big ass useless home, but like, if you build your own home, that's got to be a special feeling that I have never acquired. And to just upsize that again, even city planning, like the way that a good city is designed, or when you look at archaic or old cities that have grown organically, and the differences between a very strict government-controlled city planning, like when you think of like some sort of Soviet Russia, a lot of government housing areas aren't concerned with the art and aesthetic of buildings, and you feel it, and it looks drab and depressing. Yet some old towns that have been around for thousands of years throughout Europe or throughout the Middle East or in Africa, like, they might be different, but the wabi-sabi of the creation of it, and it's not even like anybody was really consciously, like, I mean, in the government planning, somebody was probably consciously planning it, and that's why it's so drab. But when you have something, yeah, it's really cool to look at that and how culture affects those things as well. And my favorite form of art is speech, of course. I've always gotten a strange kick. Like, it's almost addictive to the point that I can abuse it. But when I get to share a good story with somebody, especially in person, you know, like, a lot of the time it's like I have this package, and I'm really bad at having a conversation, honestly. Like, but I'm really good at, I would be a really good lecture teacher, but I don't think lecture teaching is even the best way to teach people. You know, so that's why I do this, because this is definitely an opportunity for me to broadcast, like, little bits, you know. And my interviews especially are times to practice being better at conversations, and I try really hard to be better at respecting the conversation, because conversation is something that exists between and is created by two or more partners, and that respect requires cooperation and give and take. Yet when I can give somebody a package, like, I guess when I learn something, when I first learn about it, it's so exciting. Like, it's like I make this spark inside myself and I want to like transfer that really good feeling to somebody else, you know? And like, so I'm trying to transmit that aha moment. And that's my point, you know? And so I will have like a package that is almost like a rote package, and I'll go and tell, and I used to do this even in school, where every person I come to, I just like, oh, this is what I learned. And I just give them this, like, this list of useless information, you know, and it still feels good now, but I try to check it, you know. And one of the things that I got embarrassed about is because I'd have the same message I tell one person, I go to another person, and the other person I just talked to would be like close by, right? And then I would start saying the exact same thing to another person, and I just would like have this moment where I'd step outside myself and be like, that's real fucking weird, you know? Like, what are you doing and why? You know, like, I'm not sure if you can ever transmit an aha moment. You can try, you know, but it still feels really good. And this is a very effective way to say it one time and try to do it well and have a good package. And I guess I'm trying, even from my childhood to my adulthood now, I'm still trying to give you that spark. I'm trying to give you that aha moment. You know, like, a lot of these parables and stories and Taoist verses that I have read have really hit me emotionally, physically, and I would like to give you just a little bit of that feeling, you know, like, even if it's a percentage. And we talk all day, every single day. We are always talking with people, and we always have a chance to have a good conversation with somebody, and we are social creatures, and it feels good. Like, I'm not a scientist, and I'm not really good at being persuasively science-minded even. Yet, I would hazard to say that when we talk with another person, that there's quite a bit of dopamine and quite a bit of serotonin that is probably dropped in those moments. Like, I love talking, you know? Speech, the gift to be able to talk with people. We are all so lucky, and I am so grateful that we all have these opportunities every day. Even when we're in terrible moods, there are people who try to lift us up and ask us if we're okay. You know? So, I think art is a way of expressing meaning in a very personal way. And the way that we personalize this piece of ourselves is specifically outside of ourselves. Whereas this special meaning that we're talking about, that I think is imbued in all of these different types of art, even if it's subconsciously, is related to the spark that is within us, that the Taoists would call the virtue of the Tao, perhaps, or the Atman, the soul, the spark, there's so many different, and I think it's all talking about this very similar root source idea. But to take something that I believe exists only internally and to put it outside of ourselves, I think that's a very mystical moment. And I would also say that some people probably would doubt that art, like, so in the Republic, Plato criticizes art heavily. And when I read it, I just recoiled, like, because it was just so against what I personally believe. But he said that anytime we reflect the original, and Plato has this Platonic idea of forms, and so everything that exists has a formal form of it. So you can see an aspen tree and a pine tree and all these different types of trees, right? But for Plato, there would be a formal idea, and somewhere out there in the world of forms, there is the tree that personifies every other bit of treeness, and that we can never sense this land of forms, but that's what the point of knowledge and wisdom gaining would be. And every time we reflect off of an idea, it denigrates it for Plato. So in Plato's Republic, all these sophisticated Neapolitans are sitting around at a drinking party discussing how they would build a city and in what way they would institute the government and all the policy in the city. And so Plato's idea was you should illegalize all the poets and illegalize the artists because they're reflecting reality. And every time they do that, they denigrate from the forms. And sorry, Plato, I love you and I love Socrates if you're listening, but I disagree like so heavily. It's so counter, and I don't think I could ever think. I would say the opposite, and I, the gingerbread man, would say that art is a piece of ourselves that we have somehow not like ripped out of us, but not, it doesn't subtract from who we are. It's like we're creating ourselves a little bit more. Every time you just, I don't know, make like the Grinch's heart got a little bigger. It helps me, man. Like expressing myself is one of the reasons that I think life is so fucking cool and grand. I apologize for my voice. I'm very tired. It's been a really long couple of weeks, and I've worked my ass off, and my respiratory system's not too happy with me. You know, I haven't felt great since COVID back in April, but I'm definitely kind of shitty. I got my first vaccine. I don't know how your opinion is on that, one way or the other. I got it because I wanted to go to a comedy show. So there you go. But yeah, I got my first vaccine, and honestly, I was hoping for a little bit of relief, maybe, you know, because I haven't felt good for a long time, and this weather, this wet, cold shit that's coming in with the winter time right now, and all this work has definitely put a number on me, so we'll see. I'm not trying to do an ASMR episode here, that wasn't my intention, but anyways, so do we view art like, do we view it like, do we see it, do we receive it purely from only our own vantage point? Like, does that make any sense at all? I hope it does. Like imagine, like, this harkens back to my previous point where I'm not sure if I can ever transmit that aha, that special aha moment where the light bulb pops off. I'm not sure if I could really transmit that thing because I'm not sure if anybody could see it from my viewpoint perfectly. Like, and I don't know if anybody ever can perceive art the way we do. Like, you know, when you have a song you like a lot, and then you try to show it to somebody and they obviously don't get it, and you were just so excited because you, like, I think as a child, I really believed that they're going to hear it exactly the way that I just did, you know, and they don't. And some people start talking, and that's like, I don't know. I always just get so embarrassed, you know, because I realize, yeah, it's a learning point. That was a lesson. It's a lesson. Thank you, world, for that lesson. But that can be depressing, or that can be amazing, because that means that your art has as many faces as can see it. And every single different ear that is listening to my voice right now, hopefully you can see me. At least you perceive a little bit of my essence, even if you never see my face. And every single person who sees me is going to see me a little bit differently. And that's kind of cool. there are billions of me, or not billions, I haven't met a billion people, but hundreds of me walking around in people's, in their heads. Like, there's hundreds of me, you know, and there's hundreds of you and all the people that you have interacted with. And everybody who sees you a little bit differently because they have a different vantage point and they have a different idea and they have a different upbringing and they have a different everything. You know, like some people I just have never been able to win over because they do not like me. And that's okay. That's life. And that's because of this perception and this subjectivity in our placement in this universe, and none of us is ever going to occupy the same space and the same mind and the same soul at the same time. And the more we realize that, I think that can be fertile soil for a little bit of compassion for our loved ones and the ones we don't like. And the more we can like the ones we don't like, the better off this world is going to be. Why do I make art? I think I always wanted to make art. And I was never very good at it when I was younger. At least I didn't want to try and step outside my comfort zone enough. And my comfort zone was books and just digesting information and consuming content. And I was much more of a consumer than I was a creator. Assuredly. That is a very true statement. So that made it so that I wasn't even willing to try. And I probably never touched anything with colors much until after I was 18 years old. Like I when I did do anything, it was really freeform doodles that I wouldn't pay a lot of attention to, always in black and white. Because as soon as you start to add color, it gets a lot more complex because then you have to do a lot more shading. And I never did any shading. It was always just bold lines. Like, so me starting to create content was an experiment, you know? I would rather put more things out than I use, personally. And it feels good. Like, it feels good to make stuff. And it's kind of sad that I couldn't have realized that younger. Because if I'd realized that younger, I would just... Not that it's important to be better at it, but I'd have more opportunity and different things I could be playing around with. And I don't have a lot of... width on what I can do right now. Like, there's a lot of things I could do for this show. You know, I want to add segments. I want to add music. I want to, like, you just wait a couple years from now. I'm going to love to see the progression on this, you know, because I have a lot of ideas. I just technically... I don't have the knowledge to incorporate it yet. And if I had started doing things younger, I would just have so much more knowledge and I'd be having more fun, you know? Like, it's so fun to share. It's so fun to share and to express myself. And honestly, a lot of times my art comes from really dark places. The show generally does not, sometimes it does, but I try to have a little bit of half and half at least. I don't want it to be too dark or too hit yippee-ki-yay on the motherfuckers, but like my poetry especially, I don't think I've ever written a poem from a happy place, and I don't think I could. Maybe I can find some. I don't even know where my phone is. Oh, shit. Here, technical break. Hi. Okay. So this one was from a year ago. It's not too shitty. I've got some really shitty ones. So here it goes. Prose is a rose to me. Thoughts spindling upwards. Caught, tangled moments froze. Bleeding heart exposed momentarily. Words fleeting, hark and true feeling. significant hopes to find necessarily. Meaning gleamed across the expanse, infinite space from mind to mind, perceived fragments rearranged in dissonance. So, yeah, I generally don't do really, I don't know, pretty shit, I don't think. I don't necessarily think I'm that good either. But, like always, this has always been an experiment just to share, you know, like putting little pieces out so it's easier for me to share myself generally. I think it's just a good direction to be moving personally. I don't know how you feel about it. What do you think? Do you think it's better to put yourself out or to not do that? All right, so this one is not as fun. Brain laying slowly decayed, past frayed knots litter. Foggy decisions further denigrate, possible options quickly flitter away. Every thought is a seed, to be watered or forgotten, especially those stuck weeds. I am the tender of the garden, me. This society is harsh and inhuman. Profits prioritize life. This isn't how people stand, far apart, not minding another's tithe. Pan. I'm going to keep struggling, keep moving forward. No other choice would needs tugging. Love is far easier to comport as I water the roots and I let my brain begin to sort. So where does art come from? One of the weird things I ask about a lot of things in life is, do I find it or do I make it? Like, there's a distinction between picking something up on the ground and putting something from inside you out, which I personally think it's a piece of me, but maybe there could be more gray. As I start to lean into more woohoo and spiritual readings and ideas and beliefs, and I start to feel it more, you know, I don't think I believe in a god or a deity, but I am starting to try to form a relationship with the world. Instead of living on the world, I'm trying to have a relationship with the world. As like, I call it nature and the world, you know, and maybe it's just my way of not saying God, which is what a lot of people have told me. But I find myself falling into that wormhole more and more. And sometimes when I lean into that, I feel inspired, you know? A lot of substances that have a psychoactive nature, and I'm not talking about heroin, but the silly ones, the things that people get very obsessed with, these honestly not very important side effects, you know, like the hallucinations that you perceive on certain substances are not there. That's not the important part. It's almost like it's a consequence of the brain losing its dependability as we ride it. And when we lose that subjective equipment that can measure and gain this exterior, the world, you know, like, weird things happen, and that's what these hallucinations are perceived as. And a lot of them are gorgeous and beautiful, but it's a distraction in my mind. I read somewhere that I think it might have been Timothy Leary, or maybe I don't, not Watts, but they said, you'll find gold mines up there, but you got to keep walking, keep going past, you know. And what a lot of you hear from the gurus that have been exposed, at least that I've read about from Ram Dass and some others, is like when certain spiritual figures, even the gushy ones that weren't not really amounting up to much, most of them said that it was an impermanent access to that idea, that samadhi. you know, this nirvana that is sought when mindfulness has achieved its ultimatum, and that idea of enlightenment or whatever shit, illumination, you know. And these substances, a lot of them can almost be like a key or a door to that idea, but that it's impermanent. And no matter, you can be very, very ignorant and be shown this door, and it can drive you mad because you're not prepared to deal with it. And yet again, you could be very wanting, and if you only use that substance. So Das called it, Das mentioned this idea from India called the upaya, I'm awful. But it's your method, the way that you are seeking your path. And there's many different methods. There's many different gurus. There's the upa guru. That's the guru that you encounter every day. I'm so sorry. Oof. Loud. Oh, man. But the upa guru, you find all the time. And anyway, that wasn't my point. But so the method that you're using to get towards what you're going, eventually you have to drop that as well, because you get addicted to what helped you get away from the idea of getting addicted to stuff. And so what helps you get better, eventually you lean on it too much. Like, I've had many people that were more intelligent than me tell me that I was actually over meditating. You know, like, if you don't have the right headspace, you're not doing the work. And this is what happens with these substances too, is that you could get there over and over again, but you always come down, you know. And if you can't do the work when you're sober, and if you don't drag a message out of it, which is what I always intend to do whenever that I embark and travel, is that I am hell-bent on bringing something back with me, you know, or at least making something that I can use in real life to help me further my idea towards whatever I'm going towards, which I refuse to call enlightenment, really, but, or better. Even better is not the right idea, because better is a relative term, because better than what? Like, who's to say what's ever better? If better is only related on being better than something else, then everything's actually better, because everything's better than something else, right? But I digress. How do I feel right now as I'm making this? How do I feel? How do you feel, the gingerbread man? I feel good. I feel a release. I feel a little bit of anxiety. This art form is really hard, because it's hard to fix it, because I'm really dumb with the computer at this point, so. I don't really plan much. I have like a paper full of ideas, but I don't follow them much. So it's always a little nerve-wracking at this point. But I'll listen to it, and 95% of the time, even if I'm not happy, I put it out, because it's the experiment to see how this whole thing goes, expressing. And maybe that could be a challenge I have for you this week, if you're listening to me right now. Hi. Wherever you are in the world, you and your beautiful face and your amazing soul inside you, or spark, or whatever you want to call it, whatever makes you hum, I challenge you to try to express yourself in some way, even if it's in a conversation, or just on a napkin with a pen, you know, or anything, you know. Go dig in the sand, make a sandcastle. Or take some sticks and tap out a beat. Or you could take a video with your phone, because everybody has a phone right now. You're probably listening to me on a phone. But try to take a piece of how you're feeling and put it in the world, and maybe share it with somebody. And if you can, tell me about it. I'll put my email address, or I'll make an email. I don't know. I've been putting my personal email out on all these episodes, but I'll put my email address in the show notes, and please email me and we can have a discourse about how you're expressing of yourself. And maybe, as a caveat, even challenge somebody else to try to express themselves. And you don't even have to call it art. Don't put a lot of pressure on it. And just see how you feel, you know? But we're talking about sources. So I definitely think that tension and fear, which is the heart of anger, and anger might be the heart of sadness a lot of the times, not the griefy type of sadness though. But all these things create tension, and the guitar string only plays because it has tension on it. And you can create beautiful things with harmony within that tension. It at least helps relieve some of it if you show it. And also, inspiration from whatever that wooshy, goofy, godly, whatever it is that I feel better with, if I'm at least treating respectfully and trying to have a good relationship with. And even sometimes a good psychedelic dalliance, as long as I'm whoever is being responsible. I'm not a doctor, I'm not giving any medical advice. But if you are legally allowed to in whatever country you are in, or I'm not giving any advice in any way, shape, or form, but if you do whatever you want to do as an adult, like, just grab a message out of it, because I do think that those things show real doors to something mystical, and there are really crazy things to learn from it. You know, and it helps make art too. I always feel very inspired to make a lot of things after a good journey. You know, some of my best stuff has been coming out of a wormhole, and that piece of art being from that strange place helps anchor me and helps remember my lessons that I was trying to learn. So it's a double whammy of help. I don't know. Give me some of your ideas if you have any. We'll talk about it. When you experience art, what does it feel like to be moved? Like, you know, when you see something for the first time, have you ever heard something that was just so different? You're like, whoa, fuck yeah, that's good. Like, that moves me a little bit. And it's crazy because sometimes I'm like, I'll never hear anything better than that. And I always do. There's always something else better. Or not better. Not the best word. I hate that word. Not better. But something new and something else to be appreciated. Another new pretty rock to pick up. Yeah. I like it. Anyways, it's getting late. So, before I pass it on to O, let's do some Taoist reading. This one was fun. So this is from Chuang Tzu. So we have, I think I've actually read about this one character before in a previous podcast, but it actually gives a little bit more information, this one. So this one's called The Owl and the Phoenix. And it goes, Hu Tzu was prime minister of Liang. He had what he believed to be inside information that Chuang Tzu coveted his post and was intrigued to supplant him. In fact, when Chuang Tzu came to visit Liang, the prime minister sent out the police to apprehend him. The police searched for him 3 days and three nights, but meanwhile, Chuang presented himself before Hu Tzu of his own accord and said, Have you ever heard about the bird that lives in the south, the phoenix that never grows old? This undying phoenix rises out of the South Sea and flies to the Sea of the North, never alighting except on certain sacred trees. He will touch no food, but the most exquisite rare fruit, drinks only from the clearest springs. Once an owl, chewing a dead rat, already half decayed, saw the phoenix fly over, looked up, and screeched with alarm, clutching the rat to himself in fear and dismay. Why are you so frantic, clinging to your ministry and screeching at me in dismay? So obviously he was comparing the emperor to an owl, and his office was the decaying mice, mouse, rat, food, whatever. And obviously, yeah, an enlightened activity would be looking for something a lot better than office or fame. Always. Recognition is an important in art. When you make something, even if you share it, it doesn't matter if they appreciate it or not. The fact that you shared it is more important than how they feel about it, because everybody's going to have a different vantage point. You know, like, it's not your responsibility to move anybody, but hopefully you will. You can hope for it, but there should be zero expectations. So this one was really fun. I want to do the turtle one. Chuang Tzu, with his bamboo pole, was fishing in Pu River. The Prince of Chu sent two vice chancellors with a formal document.
We hereby appoint you Prime Minister.
Chuang Tzu held his bamboo pole, still watching Pu River. He said, I am told there is a sacred tortoise, offered and canonized 3,000 years ago, venerated by the prince, wrapped in silk, in a precious shrine on an altar in the temple. What do you think? Is it better to give up one's life and leave a sacred shell as an object of cult in a cloud of incense 3,000 years old? Or better to live as a plain turtle dragging its tail in the mud?
For the turtle, said the vice chancellor. Better to live and drag its tail in the mud.
Go home, said Chuang Tzu. Leave me here to drag my tail in the mud. So I definitely felt a relation between those two. And I think they speak to similar. So I guess this would be more of a bend in this scenario towards, if somebody offers you fame for your art, like this right here, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I pay money for this. I don't make anything from this. This is a service to you because I care about you. And I think you are all, and every single other bit of life on this planet, are just amazing individuals, even if they're mistaken and ignorant. You are all beautiful, amazing people. And that's why I make this show, you know, and that's why I express myself in this fashion. If I ever made money for this, and if I ever did monetize this officially, it would ruin it. It would never be the same again. I would never feel the same about it. And so I would always, and I'm not giving advice. I'm not saying don't go make money. If you can easily monetize it, if this ends up monetizing somehow, I'm not going to stand in its way and refuse it, because that could better my son's life and all that. But I'm not outwardly trying to make this into anything. And that's kind of what I see out in this one is when office comes and offers, and it doesn't have to be a diplomatic office. It doesn't have to be like you're going to be a governor or an emperor. It could be, you know, just being given any opportunity. But what if the opportunity that you're being given for whatever career or job, you know, like, say, like sports or whatever, like some people give up a lot of health for these jobs, you know, or going to doing whatever, you make sacrifices for whatever you're doing. And at least it should be really weighed up to see if that's what you want to do with your whole life. Or if you're just selling yourself, like you're selling yourself to be a canonized turtle shell for the cult. Yeah. Let's see here. Random Tao verse. Let's see what we get. Verse 9. Holding on and filling to the brim is not as good as stopping in time. Pounding to sharpen a point will not make it last longer.
Rooms filled with gold and jewels cannot be protected. Pride in wealth and power invites misfortune. When your task is done, withdraw. This is the Tao of heaven. So, you know when you have like a cup and you go up to the sink and you're not paying attention and it overflows? Have you ever just, like, I started to pour it out, but have you ever tried to drink it and you always pour it on your hand? That's kind of the idea. And it's overextending yourself applied to anything, really. Like, overfilling on anything. Too much alcohol, too much food, too much talking, you know? Like, too much expression. You know, I know I've been telling everybody to express themselves, but if you overexpress, you can get overexhausted and overtired. If you overhelp people, you can't help people anymore because you're too tired. So maybe that's why this verse appeared tonight, was because there is a limit to everything, even in art, even in expression, and in work and everything. So there should be moderation and at least an honest appraisal of all of that activity. Pounding to sharpen a point. It's like when you, have you ever had, like, so as a cook with a chef knife, you hear a lot of people and they'll chop, they'll be like, chop on the board, like, a lot. And that will dull the shit out of your knife. And you can sharpen it a lot, but you're going to have to over-sharpen it. So you end up with, like, it's just not a good, so you want smooth cuts. You don't want a lot of pressure. You let the knife do the work. Like, or like with a pencil, too much pressure, you break it. Like, I was having a conversation with O about that the other day. If you have a lot of prized possessions, you're more likely to get robbed. Pride and wealth and possessions, you know, that's what leads to fear, more security. And after you've done it, go away. Pursuing that high, like when you have a good thing happen, hurrah. Don't pursue the next one immediately and make your life a series of, it's just a different hit. It's a different high. Successes, I mean. And just be a moderate user of it. Doesn't mean be abstinent from success. It doesn't mean you have to be abstinent from anything. But be a moderate user and be mindful of it, at least, right? Interesting. Yeah, this was fun. I didn't really choose those. I knew that the turtle was close to the other one that I did. But that was cool. Usually I look them up, but woo. Okay. I got one last parable off the top of my head that's been really getting me. So I heard it on a different podcast, the Cup of Tao. He's a wonderful man. Great show. I really enjoy it quite a bit. I wonder if you'd ever listen to this, but, anyways, so this is kind of how he told it. So you got it, and it was not how he told it, but, so you got a dude and he's running away from like a shit ton of lions, and the lions are like super fearsome, and they're like, rawr, like just think about them. Like, their mouths are all open and gnashing. They're roaring. You know, I envision a bunch of male lions, even though that's super misogynistic, and more, it's more likely that they're female lions. But he's running away, and he ends up, like, slipping, falling off of a cliff somehow, or into a ravine, and he's, like, holding on to a root that's coming out of the cliff face. And as he's holding out of it, long on onto it, he looks up, and there's, like, a bunch of mangy, gnarly-ass rats climbing up the root, and they're gnawing at the root. And in that moment, he looks directly ahead, and there's a strawberry growing next to the root. He picks the strawberry and he eats it, and he savors every single last mushy, tart, red, flavory bite. You know, end of the parable. Which I really like how obnoxious that is, because there's not a lot of closure. But stuck between a rock and a hard place, I always constantly say that I'm fucked. And it's not true. And I'm sorry, world. I'm sorry, Tao. I'm sorry, God, Brahm, whatever it is. You know, like, the world doesn't fuck anybody. Everything is just opportunities and lessons, and it's full of struggle. The Tao teaches that opposites are not only intentional and necessary, opposites are the same thing. It's one coin, typically hot and cold. Relativity is all subjective to experience. And within positivity and negativity, if we reject every negative experience, negativity and positive, the good and the bad moment are all essentially the same thing. It just is. And to reject struggle is to reject every positive thing that has ever happened to us. And we can't do that. All right. Love you guys. Hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. I hope to hear from some of you. Yeah, off to O. Good night.
Hello, I am back, and I'm really good at with art. You can see I'm Odin, and you can just hear me. Me and my dad, more shows about me. And today's question for me is art. I'm really good at art, cause you know. So, I can do a drawing on YouTube and make it the best drawing.
What do you like to draw?
I like to draw a haunted house.
Really? Why haunted houses?
Cause it's Halloween, and at this past Halloween, and my favorite one's going to be Christmas.
Oh yeah.
Yep, because
what kind of art would you make for Christmas?
I would make a Christmas tree. A Christmas tree. That's what I want to make.
What colors would you make a Christmas tree?
I make green, red, and a pencil.
Yeah.
And what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
So,
why is art important?
Because it gets your hand moving.
How does it make you feel?
It makes me feel good.
Does it?
And calm.
What kind of advice would you give somebody else on how to make good art?
I'll give them a draw along and see if they can make a best draw along.
Really? That seems like some good ideas. You want to say bye?
I have one more question.
What's your question?
My question, today's answer, if you want to answer this question, now.
Sure.
If you're a kid and you're having bad days, then, and your dad's having bad days, then you can get your and your dad and physical therapies.
Physical therapy?
Yeah.
You think? Can you stop kicking that, buddy?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for being here with me.
Yep. I'm here for every day. Bye.